Rabotai, there's an incredible shame of Shmuel on Pashas Vayechi. It says that Vayechi Yaakov Be'eretz Mitzrayim Shvas Reishona. So Yaakov lived in the land of Mitzrayim for 17 years, and the Zohar emphasized the word Vayechi, because he had also last week's parasha about the Chivuach Yaakov Aviyah. So Vayechi doesn't necessarily only mean to live in a simple way, but Vayechi means to have vitality. Yaakov Avinu was very alive. He was very alive. Because we know that his whole life was since the Bechorah. His whole life was one difficulty after the next. The difficulty of Esav running away to Lavan and dealing with Lavan, and then the way back again Esav, and the problem of Dinah and Yosef. So he had huge problems. But this 17 years, these last 17 years of his life, when he came back to Mitzrayim, and he was with Yosef. Yosef was a king. All his children with tzaddikim, and they lived a very good physical life. Yosef was providing for them, so it was chaim, it was real life. It's kind of Eliyo, which is Chazal, say that this was like olam. It was like olam haba. It was almost like the time of Mashiach. So he wants to understand how come this took place in Chutz La'aretz. Well, it should have taken place in Eretz Yisrael. That was the goal of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, was to live in Eretz Yisrael. So why was it that these wonderful, beautiful years of Yaakov in his life were in Mitzrayim, four places? So he has a very interesting interpretation.
So I'm not sure I understand the question too much. It's because these years were so special, so
they should have been spent in Eretz Yisrael. This was the ultimate life of Yaakov Avinu. Type of Olam Haba. So it should have been in Eretz Yisrael, because that's where Jews are supposed to be. The fact that, let's say, we Jews in America live in the world that they say in Yiddish are good and tug, we have it beautiful, and the Jews in Israel are suffering, is backwards. It's all a mirage. It shouldn't be like that. It should really be Jews in Gola should have Tzaras, and Jews in Eretz Yisrael should have Main Olam Haba. So what? How come by Yaakov Avinu was the opposite? So he has a very interesting interpretation. We know that in Gan Eden, when Adam Rishon was in Gan Eden, there were two trees. There was one tree called the Tree of Eitz HaChaim, the Tree of Life. Another tree was called the tree of Eitz Hadas, Tovarad, knowledge of good and evil. It says that, based upon the Zohar says an interesting thing. It says that basically the difference between the tree of life and the tree of good and evil, the Zohar says, is that the tree of life represents stability. It can come here. The tree of life. The tree of life is stability. Life. So you stay alive. The tree of good and evil, that's a tree which represents instability. Good, bad, light, darkness, it represents instability. So now he says we understand something about the Sukkim over there. After Adam ate from the Eitz Hadas, Tov V'Ra, then all of a sudden Kadosh Baruch Hu says, we've got to get him out of Gan Eden, lest he go eat from the Eitz Chaim. He'd live forever. But apparently before he ate from the Eitz Hadas, Tov V'Ra, he was allowed to eat from the Eitz. God didn't care if he ate from the Eitz Chaim. So how come the problem of the Eitz Chaim became such a problem only after he ate from the Eitz Hadas, Tov V'Ra? Why wasn't it a problem before? The answer is like this. The Eitz Chaim is a tree. If you eat from the tree of life, it creates a permanence, it creates a stability that things stay the same forever. So before he ate from the Eitz Hadas, Tov V'Ra, he was a good man. If he eats from the Eitz Chaim, that would become a permanent characteristic. He would stay good forever. That was fine. God had nothing against that. But once he ate from the Eitz Hadas, Tov V'Ra, the tree of good and evil, then Adam became an unstable person. Became unstable, unpredictable. One day he's good, next day he's bad. One minute he's good, next minute he's bad. If he's going to eat from the Eitz Chaim and permanently get this type of personality, an on-off personality, it'll be a disaster. He'll never be able to achieve redemption because he's always going to be switching from good to bad, bad to good. So that's why Hashem Yisbarach said, I don't want this feature of the human being, that human being is an unstable, unreliable personality, on and off, good, bad, bad, good. I don't want this to be a permanent feature of his personality. I don't want it to remain like this forever. I want there to be a chance for people to change. Yeah, we're born, people are born, once other mates from Eitz Hadas, Tov V'Ra, people are born with this paradoxical nature of good and evil. It's endemic to the human being. It's part and parcel of our very nature that we're born with the good and evil. However, what's remarkable is that we were given by God a redemptive capacity. We have a possibility of redeeming ourselves from the evil which is within us. Even though it's an amazing phenomenon that God creates man with good and evil inside, and gives man the ability to remove the evil and to become just good.
Can you really remove it? And then you could
or control it. That's the focus of the Tanya, the book called Tanya, where his main, let's call it, agenda or problem is when good overwhelms the evil, when the good takes control of man, what happens to the evil? Is the evil completely eliminated or is just under control? That's the issue of the book of the Tanya. But whichever way it is, maybe some people, he claims, have the ability to completely eliminate evil. Some people have only the ability to control evil. Some different levels of possible control. But it's an amazing thing. Even though when we're born, the Gemara says, when man is born, his Yetzer Hara, in a natural level, naturally, man's Yetzer Hara, his evil side, is stronger than his good side. In fact, it says until a boy is bar mitzvah, he only has an evil side. The good side is almost just a seed. It doesn't really take control until you reach intellectual level of a certain level of intellectual maturity. So, yeah.
Are they related, like intellectual maturity and your good side? Like, is one
that? According to that approach, which is in the Gemara, the intellectual side is the source of goodness, of understanding what's good, found intellect. So even though naturally the evil side of man is naturally stronger, but there is a potential for the good to totally conquer the evil, the good side. Even though naturally it's like the story of Yaakov and Esav. Esav is obviously much stronger than Yaakov. He's a warrior. Yaakov is a bookworm. So Esav is physically much stronger than Yaakov. Still, Yaakov has the ability to conquer Esav. Jewish people is very weak compared to all the nations in the world. All the nations in the world are much, much stronger. Still, the Jewish people have the potential to overwhelm the nations of the world. That's what it says, lo b'chaya lo b'koach, ki em beruchi, the prophet says. The prophet says the Jewish people will not win the struggle with the other forces in the world through physical strength, but through the Spirit of God. My spirit. So, in general, Jews have always, the Jews have always focused on the mind as being the real arena of the battle, the arena of ideology. That's where you see Jews are at the forefront, ideological movements, because we know that the Iker is in the Ruach. The main thing is in the Ruach, in the mind, the ideas, the spirit. That's where the real victory is there. The real battle takes place over there. And the same thing within every human being. If you get the mind, the good side of the person gets control of the mind, of the Ruach, he'll already be able to control and overcome the evil side, which is basically in a lower level. The evil side is more rooted in the body, in the physical. We know that there are three levels of the soul. There's the physical, and then there's the emotional, and there's the intellectual. The physical, per se, has more evil in it, much more. Because it's just passion, basically. Then the emotional has the physical is almost totally evil, because what the physical side is only passion. It wants to eat, it wants to have sex, it's pleasures. None of this is good at all, per se. Then the emotion is more of a mix. There's good emotions, there are bad emotions. It's more of a balanced struggle. And the intellect, if the intellect is a good intellect, then the intellect really has potential for a lot of good. So according to some theories, the whole goal is the intellect. That's why there's this incredible emphasis in Judaism on study. What is study? Talmud Torah. Why is there so much emphasis on Talmud Torah? More than anything else. Talmud Torah, Keneged Kulam. 613 mitzvahs, many, many do's, many, many don'ts, and Talmud Torah, Keneged Kulam. Because Talmud Torah is the intellectual arena. So if I get my brain to be on a good track, which is studying the Word of God and the ideas which He presented to us, so my brain becomes a Torah brain, I'll be able to overcome the struggle of the emotions and then conquer the passions of the physical. That's the theory of Judaism, to work on the brain as the Iker. But man per se is on and off. He's tov v'ra. He's an unstable being. So that's why Shem Yisbarach said, don't eat from the Eitz HaChaim. Don't eat from the Tree of Life. Because the Tree of Life is the concept of permanence, of stability, of no changes. So it would be terrible if man would permanently bake into himself this instability. of being a Tov Ra forever by eating from Eitz HaChaim. So Kadosh Baruch Hu sent him out and said, no, I want him. He is unstable, unfortunately. He's Tov Ra, good and bad mixed together. But he had the ability to change that and to redeem himself and to become, at least in practice, totally good. He can change his on-off situation. So, or he can get control of it. So we don't want him permanently make man an on-off, bad, good personage. There are a lot of philosophers, thinkers in the old days and nowadays, who basically give up. They are miyayish. They give up hope for man ever achieving redemption. They think man is condemned forever to be a mix of good and evil. Then, if it was in recent years, they've come up with the concept of moral relativism. They've become so, these thinkers have become so disenchanted and so frustrated with the idea of man becoming really good, so they say there is no such a thing as good and bad. Everything is relative. What I think is good today is bad tomorrow, it's bad tomorrow is good the day afterwards. So everything, because they don't want to give man, they don't believe that man can do this. That's the moral relativists of today. Then the Christians, they said man is so lost in sin that the only hope is that their God and his redeems them. So therefore, forget man's ability to control himself. He really can't. But by latching on to the superhuman deity, so you wind up in heaven anyway. Which is also, they're basically very, very pessimistic about the ability of man to redeem himself and to become good. The only religion, I think, that has confidence or optimism in man is Judaism. Judaism is a very optimistic religion. It thinks that man can deal with the evil, the good and evil, in this world. Now, of course, some of the Eastern religions say we'll sort of meditate, get out of this world. That's already also escapist. Judaism is the only religion which is confrontational, confronts good and evil directly, challenges, faces it, believes man can redeem himself from the evil, even though naturally he's probably more evil than good. He's born with a stronger evil side than with his good side. That's a tremendous amount of work. For those of us who are from religious Jews, we know that it takes us many, 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 many years as religious Jews studying Torah and thinking about character, doing good deeds, mitzvos. It takes many, many years to get some level of control of the evil side.
Some people
have
more evil than others, that is possible.
Some people are cursed with more evil than others, so it's a difficult challenge. It's very hard. No one should think that it happens in one day, getting control. It's weird that a tzaddik is born that way. The vast majority of the tzaddikim have become righteous, special people who intense, tremendous amount of work over many, many years, of Torah and mitzvahs. But what we know is that Talmud Torah keneged kulam. Studying the Torah is a very great, tool in this struggle, in this way of doing it. So, Rasi Yetzirah. Chazal say that God said, I made the evil side, and I, in the Torah there's a method of overcoming the evil side.
Right.
Yeah.
Is it cursed to have start off with more evil in the Shah? Or?
Well, I don't know. That's a good question.
Like I heard they say, like the Baal Tshuva can get to higher heights than the tzaddik in the back.
That's true.
About she is, you know, higher than lower.
That's very true.
Maybe the more evil you have, the more penance, the more risk.
That's true. That's true. So I don't know how you. Yeah.
Your son or Rechman said that in Bereshis that the reason it says like there's a good and very good because like good represents good and very good is evil, and that the good that's inside evil is very good, and the good that's inside good is just good.
Oh, that's very good. Yeah, that's the Chazal say, Tov Ma'ov, Tov is simply good, and Tov Ma'ov, very good is the evil side. So that would support what Yonah said, that really it's not a curse, which I use the word it's a curse, but really this view says that the existence of evil in man is a blessing, because by redeeming oneself from evil and converting it into good, in other words, the Baal Tshuva discovers greater good than it would just be good itself. That's very true. Yeah, that's good. Thank you very much. You're beautiful. Very good. So, that's excellent. Okay, so now, good. Now he says like this. We have here then now two models. There's a model of an unstable personality, someone who's flip-flopping, good and evil, and then there's the model of the stable personality, hopefully just good. Chas v'shalom, it shouldn't be just bad, just good. So this is reminds us, he says, of the comparison of the days of the week in Shabbos. The days of the week are on and off days. It's good, it's bad. Shabbos is only good. It's a beautiful, good day. It's a very stable day, Shabbos. It's not like the rest of the week. The rest of the week is on and off. Shabbos is a beautiful, stable day. And he says here a very interesting point, which I mentioned already many times in these in our group meetings here. When a person is keeping Shabbos, he's not keeping Shabbos for one day. When a person's in Shabbos, Shabbos is forever. That's the way a person is supposed to experience the Shabbos. Experience the Shabbos, that this is forever. It's forever going to be so beautiful. Forever I'm going to have this menucha, this feeling of contentment which Shabbos brings. When Shabbos ends and you make Havdalah, it's a surprise. The surprise that Shabbos got cut off. Because really, Shabbos is Mein Olam Haba. Shabbos is an eternal experience. And I also even heard a halacha from Rabbi Soloveitchik. It's too advanced to and it'll take too much time to explain it here. But he explained that according to the halacha, it's also true that Shabbos is an eternal day. And Havdalah cuts it off. Really, the day of Shabbos goes forever. But you make Havdalah, it stops it. So.
But if you don't make Havdalah, it also ends, right?
It'll end by itself probably by Tuesday.
I thought that's just the sort of eating. Or
Tuesday?
But you can make Havdalah till Tuesday morning, right?
If you don't make Havdalah, it's probably going to stay Shabbos until Tuesday.
What does that mean?
That means Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Shabbos.
Oh, Shabbos?
You know, it's because Shabbos, as we said, it's an eternal day. So it can go for half a week.
So what do they do on Monday if it's Shabbos?
They don't do any work like it's Shabbos. It's a Shabbos. There's something in how
they just like keep on reading the same Torah portion and the same, they just keep on going over and over again.
They'll
repeat the same day's events over, like the same meal and.
Yeah, I guess so.
How do you eat? How do most people?
How do you do anything?
I'm saying it's how Bella enables you to eat.
I thought it was just that Shabbos. I mean, I've heard that Shabbos.
Okay, continue.
I know we're operating in different spheres right now, but maybe Shabbos ends. Halachically speaking, Shabbos ends sometime later, a little bit after Tzeis HaKohavim or something like that, some point, but you just can't eat. You're still allowed to make Havdalah. But really, the day ends by itself at some point. I don't know.
That's.
So you can do Malacha, but is that true or not?
No, you see, like, there's a coin to Halacha. Okay, let's get back into more normative halachic thinking. Until a person says Havdalah in Ma'ariv, he's asked to do Malacha. If he says Havdalah in Ma'ariv, then he's allowed to do Malacha, allowed to do work, but he's not allowed to eat until he does Havdalah on the coast of Yain, until he does Havdalah on the cup of wine. So if someone, let's say, would daven a Ma'ariv at the end of Shabbos, and he would not say Havdalah in the Ma'ariv, he would not say the Atah Hanatan prayer, he would still be asked to do Malacha until he says some kind of a Havdalah. If he doesn't say Havdalah Sunday morning, Shachris, he'll still be asked to do Malacha. This could go till Tuesday.
Is he allowed to eat?
He's allowed to eat because he never stopped the Shabbos of Malacha. The issa to eat is once a guy makes Havdalah, anyway, it gets complicated, the question. I'm picking one view now, okay? I'm not following, I'm not mentioning all the possible views. There is a view that you could. And this view is practiced by the Amshin of a Rebbe in Israel. He does keep Shabbos till Tuesday. So, it's a view. I'm not saying it's mainstream, but it's a view. So, but that everybody agrees that, I mean, not everybody, the Shema Shmuel and Rav Soloveitchik, the Rav, agree that on Shabbos itself is an eternal day. So let's say on Shabbos itself, I expect Shabbos to go forever. When we do have Havdalah, it cuts it off. Maybe there's a cutoff, God cuts it off, maybe midnight. Some people say midnight, Saturday night, it automatically ends. People say Sunday morning when the sun comes up, it automatically ends. So there might be that God himself cuts it off at some point automatically, sometime the next day. But otherwise, Shabbos would run forever. Yeah.
So, lastly, we should take that point of view. Should we, in preparing for Shabbos, should we assume that it's going to last?
Yeah. That's why on Shabbos, when we're in Shabbos, for example, we're not allowed to discuss anything about next week's plans during the week. Unless it's a mitzvah. But let's say, normal plans, I'm going to go Monday to the store because there's a sale. I'm going to go Tuesday to a basketball game. All these things we're not allowed to mention on Shabbos. Why? Because Shabbos never ends. On Shabbos, I'm living something which never ends. I can't say, Monday I'm going to go shopping. Then we're never going to get to Monday. Shabbos is forever. So it's crazy to speak about Monday or Tuesday after Shabbos. Shabbos is forever. A lot of time, you know, every so often I have something on the tip of my tongue. I would like to talk about what we're going to do during the week. But I always control myself because we're not allowed to do that. That's halacha. We're not allowed to speak the Bechol of the Shabbos. About plans of the week. Yes?
Is there an answer in Machshava?
You're allowed to think about it, but you're not allowed to say it.
Why have there been an answer in Machshava also?
It's hard to control your thoughts.
Maybe it's hard to control thoughts, but the fact is.
You can't control your thoughts.
Los Achlo.
Well, let me say this. The Hasidim, and this is a Hasidish Chabura, the Hasidim don't think about the week either on Shabbos. Now, maybe that's not halachically necessary. Halachically, you are allowed to think, but the Hasidim wouldn't think about during the week on Shabbos. Many times the guys ask questions, are you allowed to study on Shabbos for a test during the week? So certainly if you're a chassid, you wouldn't do it, because it's going to take your mind away from the focus of Shabbos. And the Shabbos is a focus, there is nothing which I have to worry about. I'm not, in fact, Shem Shmuel says many times, Shabbos is so otherworldly that I'm not even allowed to think about evil on Shabbos. For example, let's say I know I have a certain sin or character flaw or something I have to have. That's only for the week. Shabbos, we don't mention sins on Shabbos. We don't do tshuva in that sense on Shabbos. The tshuva of Shabbos is tshuva, because Shabbos spells tshuva. Shin, beis, tav, the letters of tshuva. Tav, shin, beis is teshuva. So Shabbos is teshuva. But it's not the shuva. I know I have a sin, so I feel sorry and I change, I'm going to behave differently. No, Shabbos, I'm so close to God, the world is so good, there is no sins. It just goes away by itself. There's nothing to change because we're perfect on Shabbos. Yes?
What if that naturally, I mean, let's say you realize how special your relationship with God should be, and you realize how distant you are. In other words, naturally, a lot of people will.
That's for Erev Shabbos,
Chareza, right?
Yeah, that's for Erev Shabbos. Erev Shabbos, the day before Shabbos, that's the day to feel this. That's the day to do the teshuva, an active teshuva, where we are the ones who are working on ourselves to get ourselves closer to God. But when Shabbos comes, God himself comes so close. As we just say, Bo'i Chala, God come in. He comes in, so that's it. What do I have to do? He already came to me.
So if we feel those feelings on Shabbos, we should push them away? We should.
Which feelings of inadequacy? Push them away.
Chait or whatever.
Chait, inadequacy, all those things, get out of your mind. It's an anti-Shabbos thinking. It's not the way you're supposed to think on Shabbos. Shabbos, your God is already here. He's already dancing with me. What do I have to... the whole week, when we do tshuva, I feel I'm distant, and I have to try to figure out a way how to come close to God. That's normal tshuva, to return. But Shabbos, God already came into my house. He's with me. He's at my Shabbos table. So what do I have to think? It's an insult. After the great beloved guest comes, I'm going to start thinking, how can I get him to come? How can I get to him? He's right here. What kind of crazy thinking is this? You're ignoring him. So Shabbos actually is tshuva, but it's beyond tshuva. It's beyond tshuva. Shabbos is the ultimate stable experience. The goal is to live always with Shabbos. We can bring Shabbos into the week. Yes.
Just one more question. So why would we call Yom Kippur Shabbat Shabbaton? Why would we use that Lashana? It's the very thing you're not supposed to do on Yom Kippur.
Oh, Yom Kippur Shabbat Shabbaton. Meanwhile, we're doing tshuva. Okay, it's a good question. Think about that. It's a special Shabbos, but there's also this explicit tshuva. You do mention sins. Yeah, right. Meanwhile, it's called a Shabbos. It's a good question. I'll think about that. Okay, so now, as we said, Shabbos then is the Eitz HaChaim, with its the tree of life, And the weak is Eitz Hadas Tov V'Ra. Now, also we can say, we have stable and unstable. Stable is Eitz Chaim, unstable is Eitz Hadas. Stable is Shabbos, unstable is days of the week. Same thing as the sun and the moon. The sun is always the same size. It rises and sets every day. So the sun is stability. It's like Shabbos. Or Tzaddik. The moon is always changing. The moon always changes. It's the Eitz Hadas Tov V'Ra. And that's why the Zohar says that the original sin, the Christians speak about the original sin. The original sin, Mahavdil, is the sin of the moon. When the moon got into a fight with the sun, God created the moon and the sun at the beginning, they were both the same size. But then, the moon got into a fight, so God, I'll say, you'll change sizes, you'll become small. So the moon represents instability. Instability. Tov V'Ra. It's original sin.
Isn't
Klai Yisrael
compared to the moon?
Oh, now we get the Klai Yisrael. Very good. So now there's a difference between Yaakov and his 12 sons. In this regard, Yaakov in the Medrash is called Shemesh. Because it says, he's called the sun. Because it says when he comes to the place of the dream, it says, Kivo HaShemesh. The sun came. Who's the sun? Kivo HaShemesh. This is a drash, but simple pshat, Kivor HaShemesh means the sun set. But the Medrash interprets Kivor HaShemesh, when Yaakov came, the angels, why are the angels coming down the ladder? To look at him. Why they look at him? Kivor HaShemesh. Because the sun had come to this spot. Yaakov is called the sun. Why is he called the sun? The Shemesh? Because Yaakov is a person who doesn't change. Yaakov has this stability. He doesn't change. He's good from beginning to the end. He goes through a lot of different situations. He's always loyal to his beliefs, no matter what's going on. It's a koach of stability, of a Shemesh, of a Shabbos. The 12 tribes, 12 sons, like the 12 months of the year, they represent the moon, or the moon represents them. So the Jewish people, all the different kinds of Jews, and different kinds of tribes, changing ups and downs, it's a moon-like concept. So now, he says like this. The children of Yaakov, they're like the Yireach. They're not stable. Something that's not stable has to be put into a good environment. Has to have the right conditions in order to remain stable. Otherwise, if you put it just out there, it's going to be buffeted by all the elements. It'll go back into its instability. It'll collapse. Something very delicate. It's not a stable thing. It has to be in a very controlled environment. So the Jewish people in general, many Jews, most Jews, are great, but they also have a weak side. They need a special environment. You can't put them wherever they want. Yaakov is different. Yaakov is the Shemesh. He's the sun. He's a tzaddik. He could be any place. Well, he remains a tzaddik. Like Yosef. Yosef. Yosef's like Yosef and Yaakov was identical personalities. So Yaakov and Yosef could be any place. But the tribes, you can't do that. They're too unstable. They have to be in a special place. That's why, for example, just to make it like a little down to earth, the average yeshiva boy is an unstable personality. He's a good guy, but He has a side about him which is weak. Put him in a secular college, Brandeis, NYU, Rutgers. You don't know, he's throwing dice. He could come out good, he could come out a big tzaddik, or, God forbid, could go the other way. Because the average person, Jewish kid, is unstable. He has tov, he has ra. Put him in a conditions like that, could come out either way. But, hopefully, if you put him into a controlled environment, a yeshiva, university, and you put him into special program, machina, then he becomes mamish tzaddik. He's mamish tzaddik because he's in a controlled environment where the good is nurtured, so he doesn't have to worry about the instability, which is in his nature, because he's being in a protected environment, which is nurturing the good side. And the bad side is being taken out. Yes?
Sometimes we see a personality who, if they're put in an environment, you know, where they perhaps be, you know, just another guy, they're not going to flourish. But let's say, you know, if Jesus took them out of secular college, if they had to go to a secular college and seek out the Jews and, you know, really be faced with this adversity, a lot of times they'll do much better in that situation. How do we fit that
well, in the struggle between good and evil, which every person has, there are different strategies. Of course, a simple, straightforward strategy is to be in a controlled environment which supports the good and is anti the evil, like a yeshiva. However, sometimes, as you say, a different strategy works for that, for a particular person. Some people feel whatever the reason is that the yeshiva doesn't work for them, but they would rather be in a challenging environment and to be different. They want to be different. They want to be leaders. So those kinds of people, their good side comes out because of the challenge of the adverse environment.
It has to do with the nature of the person that is has more of a leadership nature rising to the top.
That's right. So you take the Soviet Union. The Soviet Union was the worst possible environment for a person to be a religious Jew, because it was against the law. They could send a person to Siberia. So 95% of the Jews of the Soviet Union stopped being religious, because in that environment they couldn't do it. But the Lubavitchers, certain Lubavitchers, 5% of the population, they were stronger than ever. They became incredible tzaddikim in the Soviet Union, because for them adversity brought forth strength, good strength.
It's interesting, we see in Mitzrayim, in the Yidden, it's the issue to the Yerubia.
Right, that's in Mitzrayim.
An aspect of Jews.
That's right, the Jews brought out, because of the challenge, brought out the good. That's true. Very interesting. Good point. Yeah.
How could Yaakov, who was so stable, produce such unstable children?
Oh, how could such a stable father produce such unstable children?
You would think it would be in a good environment in his house.
Oh, they. Well, that's one answer, really, because he has four wives.
Right.
So if one man has four wives, he's creating an unstable situation, because children of one wife are not going to be necessarily such good friends with children of the other wife.
So we're sort of removing the responsibility from him and placing it on his wives.
Maybe on him for having four wives.
Well,
the way it worked out, he really wanted one wife, which was, I think, probably the right thing for him, because he was, as we say, stability itself, and one wife would have created an extremely stable home. But the way he wrote that, Lavan tricked him. He got the wrong wife. He got Leah instead of Rachel. So then he had to marry Rachel. So he had two wives, and there's a lot of competition between the two wives. And then they got two servants. That was also Lavan's idea, to give them servants. And Leah didn't have, Rachel didn't have children, so she convinced Yaakov to marry her, a servant girl. And then already Leah did that. So before he knew it, he had four wives instead of one. That created the instability.
So even stable people have to confront the instability of life, right?
That's right. Well, that's usually what goes on. You see, God doesn't usually make life easy for people. And it's like Ali says, God likes people to go through challenges. So usually it'll be a challenge. So usually the challenge is like the antagonist. So if Yaakov is stable by his very nature, what are the challenges of his life? Incredible instability. He has to run away, he can't stay in the house, can't stay in the shiva, has to wander around the world. You think that he has stability among his kids? No, his kids are doing incredible things to one another. So his life is a turmoil. He's naturally, he's a quiet, content person who likes to sit in one place and not bother anybody. No one bother him. But God makes life a turmoil. So usually what happens is God takes you and he throws a curveball at you towards what you think is a weakness, but then you discover that you can handle that so-called weak area. So Yaakov would be great in the yeshiva, because that's what he's made for. But he has to live a life of turmoil and wandering around the world to show that he can keep his level, or he can go greater through a tumultuous existence. That's the way it is. We don't plan. We don't write our script. Hashem writes the script. All we know is that whatever he throws at us, we can handle one way or the other. We're supposed to handle it and we can't. But usually, it's not the script that we would prefer to make an easier script, make life easier for ourselves, but that's the way it is. So Yaakov, who's Shemesh, has children. That's the way it goes. So we have the sun and the moon, we have the 12 tribes, okay. So Mela. We now know, he says like this, he claims that this is the difference. That's why the word Yaakov, it says Vayechi Yaakov. Yaakov has two names, Yaakov and Yisrael. Why is the Torah use here the word Yaakov? Because he claims like this. There's a very lot of different interesting pshatim that the Hasidim had. Yaakov means Akev. Akev is the heel, the bottom. He's nothing. It's the bottom. He considers himself low on the totem pole, Yaakov. He's very self-effacing. He says somebody who is an Akev has stability. The body stands on the heel, the Akev. So the whole stability of the body is because of the Akev, as a firm. What makes it very tough, and then it's able to support the whole body frame and give it balance. So why is that so? Because the Akev, no one pays attention to the Akev. I mean, I pay attention to my head, my eyes, the further down you go, the less you pay attention. No one pays attention to the bottom of his foot. You don't have to put any makeup if you're a woman on the bottom of your foot. No one's going to look at it. It distinguishes the least noticeable in that sense. So that's Yaakov. Yaakov is a person who doesn't want to be noticed. He's mabatel himself. That gives him his stability. Because what makes people unstable? Part of instability, maybe what he's saying is, part of instability is ego. Ego creates an unstable, because ego is trying to expand, look for things, changes, to express oneself. But if you don't have the ego, you'll be more stable. Yeah.
But it wasn't even when Yaakov changed his name to Israel.
So he says. What is Yisrael? Yisrael, I don't know, he doesn't explain it in this discussion here. He's just discussing Yaakov. Yaakov is a person who doesn't seek anything. Yisrael probably means the power to overcome evil.
What is
Yisrael? Well, Yisrael, it says in the Chumash, he struggled with the evil angel of Esav and he overcame him. So by having no agenda for himself, really, but just to let God and life take him where he has to go, he's able to overcome the evil. This, by the way, I think this concept which he's saying here is a very, very fundamental concept of Kabbalah and Hasidus, that the source of sinning and evil is ego, gaiva. The less gaiva a person has, the more onuf he is, the less chance he'll sin. Moshe Rabbeinu, onuf ma'od, was the biggest, most modest and humble. That's when Moshe Rabbeinu was able to get the Torah. David, King David, was a very humble person, so he became the king, became a tzaddik. So the key is humbleness. And humbleness just basically means to be honest with oneself, not to think that I'm more than I really am. That's all it really is, it's honesty. So that's Yaakov. So Mela, he says, an incredible book. How come Yaakov winds up in Mitzrayim? This is a very interesting thing. He says that the Ari HaKadosh said that the evil of Egypt was forgetfulness. Shikha. It's an amazing thing. What is it? It means like this. You see that God punishes Paro again and again and again. Meanwhile, every time God punishes him, it says, "Vayichbad leiv Paro." Paro makes his leiv hard. It means he has no memory. Of course, the day that the punishment, he gets all excited. He calls Moshe, "Please ask God to stop it." Then Moshe goes, prays, it stops, and then it comes back. Paro says, "Forget it." It's everything else. It's a historical amnesia. I tell you, nowadays I think that modern man is very much afflicted with this disease of historical amnesia. There are so many things which are happening, but it's only at that time that the people get. It's a funny thing. It's a funny thing. The amnesia of modern man is very short lived, because every day something else happens, so you forget about what happened yesterday or last week. You remember the headline from last week? No. You barely remember yesterday's headline. Last week's headline, don't you remember anymore? It's amnesia. We have amnesia from... We only remember things for 1 or 2 days. That's what the Abbey calls the klipa, the shell or the evil of shikha. To forget. It's an amazing thing. So, he says for the Jewish children, the children of Yaakov, to be in such a place is a disaster. Because the Jewish children, the Bnei Yisrael, they are unstable. So they can pick up a lot of things from their environment. If they pick up this shikha, this forgetfulness, this amnesia, they forget everything. That's what, unfortunately, we see by many American Jews, Israeli Jews. They forgot the whole spiritual side of being Jewish. They don't know what they think Jewish is. You're born to Jewish parents, I don't know. But they don't have any idea that of a spiritual experience of being Jewish. So it's as amnesia. Where it come from? Because the environment around them is full of this. So for the only person who can be in such an environment is a Yaakov. Because a Yaakov, because he is Shemesh, he's impervious, he has stability, no matter what the environment is, he's still excited over his Judaism. So that's why Yaakov winds up in Mitzrayim. Because Mitzrayim, since it has the koach of shikha, the power of amnesia, you need someone who can overcome that by always being committed and excited and aware of the whole past, present, future, no matter what the environment is around him. And that was Yaakov. More than the children. The children of Israel forget a lot in the years there in Mitzrayim. They drop almost everything. But Yaakov keeps everything. Yes?
He represents MS.
MS. Stability. Very good. MS, truth. So, Botai, the koch of Yaakov is the titan MS to Yaakov, as you said very well. What's your name again?
Keith.
Good, Keith. Okay. So, the MS to Yaakov is the koch of Torah. So, we know the secret is that to study the Torah, that'll give us the power to survive in any environment. But without the Torah, we will be afflicted by historical amnesia. We'll forget.
You're a fish without water.
It's a fish without water. So that's why Yaakov, when he came to Mitzrayim, what did he do the first thing? Sent Yehuda to make a yeshiva. Because to keep alive the memory of being Jewish. Otherwise people forget what it means to be Jewish. They don't know. Used to be when I was young, they said Jewish means to eat gefilte fish. But today, they don't do that anymore. People don't like gefilte fish anymore. So they say being Jewish is you march for gay rights. That's Jewish. They don't know what it is. That's amnesia. They know you want to be Jewish, but they don't know what it is. So the only way to keep it alive is to study the Torah that keeps it. We know what Judaism is. And the Jewish is. So as for Botai, we should be Zoche, the Titan Emes, the Yaakov, the truth which Yaakov knows, the stability, the study of the Torah, and no matter what environment we're in, even though we're in New York, which is a very inimical environment, a very bad environment for spirituality, it's not conducive. I'd rather be in the Poconos or Adirondacks or maybe even the Grand Canyon. There, it's an environment, hopefully, for spirituality, not this. But you have a yeshiva. So the yeshiva gives us the Torah and the environment. We can survive in any environment, even New York. Even New York. Good job.
So, in the class, I'm going to see if the pain is. the son of a Chashid Jew.
Yeah, I think you do.